You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Hey, I'm Molly Stewart, Twisties Treat of the Year, and you're listening to Holly Randall Unfiltered, sponsored by Twisties. Twisties is a leading glamour porn site for exclusively lesbian and girl-girl content. Since starting my journey with Twisties, I have shot some incredible scenes with some of the best girls, making some truly amazing fantasies come to life. For 18 years, they have featured the biggest names in the industry, recently rebranding to exclusively female content. Twisties stays focused on raising the bar of what modern porn looks like, while highlighting the up-and-coming talent of our generation. Their Treats of the Month and now Treat of the Year give viewers a taste of what their favorite girls are like under the wrapper. My journey since being their Treat of the Month in January of 2018 has been incredible, and I can't wait to see what they have in store for the future. To unwrap the hottest treats and mouthwatering scenes, visit twisties.com and find them on Twitter at Twisties and Instagram at Twisties Treats.
Hi, I'm Holly Randall, and welcome to my podcast, Holly Randall Unfiltered. This is a show about sex, the adult industry, and the people in it. I'm a 21-year veteran of this fascinating little industry, and as the eldest child of the trailblazing erotic photographer Suze Randall, you could say I grew up in it. So forget everything you think you know about porn, because this show is going to change your mind. My guests are some of the biggest names in the industry, and we unabashedly reveal the real behind-the-scenes stories. The funny, the inspiring, the tragic, and the bizarre. Everyone has an opinion about sex work, but few people actually listen to the sex workers. So sit back and prepare yourself for a podcast, which is honest, raw, and unfiltered. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Holly Randall Unfiltered. Before I introduce my guest today, I just want to give a quick shout out to my sponsors, Rocket Money. Are you one of those people who, like me, signs up for a bunch of subscriptions? There's like a ton of streaming platforms out there, and you need to subscribe to all of them, it seems, to just watch one particular show, and then you forget about it, and then you're being billed on it monthly, and you never cancel it, and you waste all this money. Yes, I do that too. That's where Rocket Money comes in. It's an app that will actually find all of your subscriptions, show it to you in one place. And the best part is that you can cancel those subscriptions through the Rocket Money app right there and then. You just pick the ones that you don't want anymore, and Rocket Money cancels it for you, which is, it's like a one-step process. Part of the reason I don't cancel a lot of my subscriptions is because I'm too fucking lazy to go through all the steps. I'd rather just waste the money. So that's why I love Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/Holly to take advantage of this amazing money-saving app. You won't regret it. Okay, so let's introduce my guest. She first joined the industry 15 years ago. Since then, she's become one of the biggest alt porn stars with a list of nominations a mile long. I have had the pleasure of working with her a few times myself. Let's welcome Jessie Lee.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for coming.
I've always wanted to be on your podcast too. I was like, I follow it, and I was like, watch your little lick preview you have on Instagram. I was like, oh, I want to be on there. And then you emailed me. I was like, oh my God, she wants me to be on it.
You manifested it.
Manifested.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I'm always very honored to hear that. So thank you. All right. Well, I guess I always like to hear everybody's origin story. So how did you get into porn? Where did this journey begin 15 years ago?
15 plus years ago, there's all those like new alt porn sites that came about. Like there was like Suicide Girls, and then Burning Angel was like the top one. And then there's like Broken Dolls and Ninja Girls and all these other like alt porn things. And Nerd Girl X, I think I was on to Deviant Nation. I just like started like modeling because I was excited tattoos. Not as many as I have now, but I had a chest piece and I had a back piece and, I think I had some on my arms. I don't know. I had tattoos. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I just started like modeling for once, and then I like applied for Burning Angel and they set up a photo shoot, and then I was like watching trailers and stuff like that from the site, and I was like, oh, I want to do that. So then,
like, actual porn.
Yeah. So then September of 2007, I shot my first porno, and then I got booked for two more, and then Jonah was like, hey, I'm gonna fly out to LA in December or whatever, yeah, December, and like shoot you for a bunch of stuff. I was like, okay. And then that's that.
What was your first scene like?
My first scene. So my first scene was with, it was a, I don't know if it was a boy girl or a boy girl. I don't know if it was like one guy or two guys, but I remember I was like doing the scene and Joanna's like, Jesse, you can be louder. I was like, okay. So then I was loud. Cause, you know, I'm so used to like, you know, being like a normal person and having like sex quiet so nobody can hear you. So, you know.
Do you live in an apartment with like
always
thin walls?
Yeah, lots of people in my apartment, very thin walls. So I, Jonah's like, Jesse, you be louder. I was like, okay. Oh, and also I was on my, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this, my period. I was on my period when I first shot porn, and I was like, I don't know what to do. And Jonah's like, oh, you put a sponge up in you. I was like, oh, okay. So that, you know, that's what people do in porn. You put, you know, get a makeup sponge, wet it, and put up in you. And then like I couldn't get it out of me. So I was like, oh my God, it's way in me. And Joanna had to actually get the sponge out of me.
Yeah,
that's how we bonded. She took out my makeup sponge out of my
I was gonna say this is not a very uncommon story. I've also had to take makeup sponges out of girls' vaginas as well. And yeah, people are always like shocked by that because they're like, oh my God, what if it goes up in you and you can't get it out? Have you ever heard about girls having to go and like get it taken out at the ER?
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah. I mean, how do you get it out now? Like if you don't have help?
I mean, I have long nails, so that helps. And I'll just squat a lot and like shove my hand up in me, try to like literally fist myself and get it out. I get it out. Sometimes it's a little harder, but I do get it out.
You know, I remember the first time I tried that, I actually asked my good friend Danny Daniels about it because obviously she had experience doing it being a porn star, and I couldn't get it out like the first time. And I was like, okay, I know that like clearly I've seen this happen and I've helped other people, but like I don't have anyone. So how do I do this? And she's like, just douche. And she was like, you know, and that might loosen up a little bit. She's like, but look, in the end, if you're on your period, like the blood will make it heavier and we'll sink down more and you'll be able to just wait. Don't panic. Well, also, just like, wait and get it later.
There,
and
I was like, it kind of feels like the rest of you inside there, you know, like it feels
it's true. It does.
Like the sponge feels like the way the inside of a pussy feels.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I just had to wait a little bit and then I was able to get it out. So, but that, yeah, people will be surprised to hear this, that, performers will work on their period and they will use, like a wedge sponge and shove it up there, and that's how they do it. I'm not recommending this as medical advice for anybody out there, by the way, but I'm just saying that girls have done this in the past in order to still perform. So that's like on top of everything else of doing your first porn scene, which is always, you know, I feel like a somewhat like nerve-wracking experience for people. That's an additional hurdle.
Yeah, because I went from like, it was like it was a boy girl. It was for a film. I forget who actually bought it, but it's called Joanna Angel Gets Totally Fucked Out of a Shower. So that was the name of the movie. And then the next scene was like a boy girl girl. And then the third scene that I get booked for, like all in the same weekend, it was a scene for Burning Angel called Fuck Thy Neighbor, with someone that I don't like to talk about, some awful performer.
Okay.
That used to be in Joanna's life. Okay. That's awful. So
okay. I think I know who you're talking about.
It was
about
a good scene, but he's horrible. So yeah. We're not going to mention his name.
So you and Joanna are very good friends.
Yeah. I love Joanna.
I mean,
just saw her. I was at her house, her apartment the entire weekend.
In New York, right?
In Brooklyn. Yeah. I flew in on Friday and I had to dance Saturday night. So I just like hung out with her all day on Friday. And then Saturday I danced at Sapphire and then I like slept at her and Aaron's place.
How, is she loving being back in New York?
She's like, I feel like her taking herself out of New York was probably the worst thing for her because she's not really an LA person. She's so, she loves.
Wow. Wow.
I just heard some.
I know.
Just,
I just did too.
We brake check.
Screeching tires outside. There was almost an accident right in front of the building, but that's okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyways.
But yeah, she's just so much of a New York person. She loves it. She loves the feel. I mean, New York's, I'm so much more of like, I want to live in suburbia now because I dealt with like city living for so long. And I'm like, I want to be where it's quiet and I have space. And
yeah. You know, it's so funny. I was always like a city girl. I actually grew up, I spent most of my childhood in the city, like in the Mar Vista, Culver City area. And then we moved out to Calabasas when I was in high school. And then I went to college, blah, blah, blah. And then when I moved back to LA, I moved back into actually the house I grew up in, ironically, in like the Culver City area. And I lived there for 20 years. And I always like, you know, loved the city and loved everything being close. But I recently moved back out to Calabasas. And yeah.
And it's like a breath of fresh air.
The parking. First of all, the parking. I can go to Target now and there's so much parking. And Target's so big.
And the Target is actually nice.
Yes. Such a nice Target.
Like I live in North Hollywood and I live in Henderson in Vegas also. I'm moving there permanently. I'm leaving Vegas. I'm leaving LA. I'm totally leaving because I'm just like, really? It's gotten bad out here, man. Especially like I live in like North Hollywood and like North Hollywood when I first moved out here in 2011, like it was like super nice. There's like Pandera there. There's a Coffee Bean there. There's like all these like really nice things and everything was super walkable and the streets are clean. And now it's like Skid Row. It's crazy. Wow. Yeah. Like I'll walk around at nighttime, like walk my dogs at nighttime and I'll get like weird like vibes. And like I used to live in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, you know, like, you know, I was just, you know, I'm all about like being in like New York and like Brooklyn area where it's like not like super safe, but it's like I feel safer out there than I do in like North Hollywood because North Hollywood's it's like crazy people everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely the homelessness has gotten pretty bad. The bridge right by where I used to live, it was the bridge right at like the intersection of the 405 and the 10. Mm-hmm. And they've called that the West Side Skid Row. And it's just grown and it's gotten huge. And actually, when we moved out of our house, and we had it up for sale, and it was empty. Somebody broke in and was living in there.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. The city's not really doing anything about it. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to move to Henderson. There's no homeless.
How do you feel? Like, do you like Vegas? Because I don't know. To be fair, I've only been to Vegas like for the Avian show. Mm-hmm. So I know very little about Vegas. I know like the strip, but to me, I don't know. It just seems like somewhere like I wouldn't like living, but you like it there.
So the only time I used to be in Vegas was for like the Avians and stuff like that. So I stayed at a hotel and it was always like, you know, Avians is like super hectic, super, super hectic. That entire week, it's like the entire weekend is like super hectic. But then I would like me and my ex-boyfriend, we would just like go to Vegas to like see stuff and like stay at a hotel and like actually explore the city. I was like, oh, it's actually kind of nice. And now that I like have an apartment in Henderson, I live with Chyna Ryder up there. But yeah, like her and I have a place in Henderson. It's like really it's quiet and everything's like 10 minutes away.
Do they have a Panera?
They have a Whole Foods. I can't actually eat at Panera anymore because I'm vegan. So I don't know what they have for vegan food there.
Okay.
So, yeah. But okay. Yeah.
But they have a Whole Foods.
Oh, yeah. They have a Whole Foods in, like, the Green Valley area. Yeah. It's, like, really nice. And, like, I don't know. It's, like, 20 minutes from the Strip. So, yeah.
How's the weather?
I mean, it gets hot, but it's, like, you get used to it.
Yeah.
So, it's not anything. I mean, it's better than, like, New York right now. Like, it was, like, 30 degrees in New York. And, like, my skin was, like, my skin's still dry from, like, I put on lotion. It's, like, still dry up from, like, being New York. I'd rather deal with, like, the heat than deal with the cold.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I guess you do get acclimatized easily.
Yeah. And I'm from Buffalo, New York originally. So I was like, I'm from like right now it's like 4 feet of snow. It's like a blizzard there.
I was going to say like you've lived in all of the places. So you've experienced all of the climates.
Karen's doing her thing. Karen's being a Karen.
So you left the porn industry for 4 years.
Yeah.
What made you make that decision and what did you do during those 4 years?
So I was, this is back when like tattooed girls were like super, super, super taboo. Like nobody wanted to hire me as a tattooed girl, like unless I did like crazy shit like with the, like Bonnie Raitt and Belladonna did. Unless I was like in Joanna, like unless I was like in that category as in like doing all these like, as an agent told me, quote unquote, circus acts. Unless I did like circus acts like on screen, like, I mean, I wasn't getting booked. And like, you know me, like I'm like, I'm a more central performer. And, like, I love being central. Yeah, I can get, like, dirty and nasty and stuff. But, I prefer, like, sensuality because that's just how I am. But, like, nobody wanted to book me. And the only people booking me was, like, Joanna. And, like, there's only so much stuff she can put on the site of me before everyone's like, oh, we're going to get to put other girls on there, too.
Yeah.
So I, like, left. I was like, oh, I got in a car accident. That's what happened. I was in a car. I was like, why did I do it? I was in a car accident. So I don't know. What did I do? I don't know. I feel like I've left the industry a few times. But one time was for a car accident that I was in. And I was back in the industry a year later. And after that, I was out for 4 years. Because I was, like, over the industry. And I, like, wanted to do something new. So I went to hair school. Mm-hmm. I'm a hairstylist. I love doing hair. But, you know, I love porn, too. Yeah. And then this last time, I didn't leave the industry. But I, like, stopped doing boy-girl for a year and a half.
And why is that?
Well, I was in a relationship and like, it's not that I like, he was like saying like, don't do boy girl, but it was like, you know, I didn't want to have sex with any other guys. Females, absolutely. Give me all the pussy, the pussy in my face. But yeah, I mean, I cheered females in them too. I'd have this like film stuff for my OnlyFans, but yeah, like, you know, and then I just like miss doing boy girl and having sex with like men that were performers, you know, because it's like different having sex with your boyfriend than having sex with the performer.
Yeah.
But I like fell out of love and then I was like, oh. I'll sex with other men too. So
So now you're back.
I am back.
Have you done, how many boy girls scenes have you done since you've been back?
Since I got back, I did one for, it actually just got released for Naughty America, Shelby Black. Cause I told Shelby, I was like, hey, you're like my favorite director. So you should like film me for Naughty America. I was like, all right, when are you free? I was like, perfect. So yeah.
Who'd you work with?
Lucas Frost.
Oh, he's lovely.
Yeah. He's a great performer. And I was like, oh, man, I missed this. So, yeah.
So now you're back.
I am back.
So we're going to take a quick commercial break. But then I want to talk about your car accident.
Yes.
It was a major fucking car accident. And remember, like, seeing how much I just remember seeing, like, Joanna posting about it a lot.
Oh, and, yeah.
Like, really. I mean, you almost died, right?
I did die for 5 minutes. Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah. Okay.
It shocked me 3 times. But yeah, talk about that after.
We'll talk about that after the police sirens go by. That's like our special like cue. It's like if I was one of those really cheesy podcasts that has like the sound drops.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, exactly. I just pressed the police siren because we talked about your car accident. We all know Adam and Eve is the one-stop shop for everything sexy. And now, with my code HOLLY, you can get any one item for 50% off, plus 10 free gifts. And you'll even get free shipping. So spice up your sex life at adamandeve.com, but only if you use code HOLLY. All right, guys, hang tight. We'll be right back. Hey, guys, we're back. So, Jesse, you had a major car accident. You were dead for 5 minutes.
It was.
Tell us about that.
So this was 2010. This was November 5th, 2010, which is crazy because it's like, you know, like remember the 5th of November. Mm-hmm. So that has like a special meaning for me, that phrase. Wow. I know it's about, you know, UK and whatnot. But yeah, like remember the 5th of November is like my thing.
Yeah, it's Guy Fawkes Day.
Yeah. But so I was on my way to Exotica in New Jersey with Joanna, and Joanna had just broken up with her big ex, like the abusive ex that everyone, you know Joanna and you know and she, you know who it is. So she had just broken up with the ex, and like she was like getting a new apartment, and like she was like leaving him completely, like she was like leaving the abusive relationship. So she was talking about it, and she was driving, and in Jersey you can't take left turns. But, I mean, I remember us going down the highway and, like, whatever. I forgot what it's called. The thing in New Jersey? The highway in New Jersey? Whatever it's called.
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever been to New Jersey.
There's a certain type of highway in New Jersey. Anyway, so we, like, missed the exit. We had to go off.
Why are you laughing? What is it?
The, Is it New Jersey Turnpike? I guess. I think that's what it's called. I don't know. Something. The rest. We're going on the highway. And so she missed the exit and she had to get off at a different exit. And I guess, like, I just remember, like, the last thing I remember is, like, getting off the ticket booth, like, the ticket booth to get off the highway. Mm-hmm. And I guess I don't remember this, but she's like, yeah, you were hungry. So I went to go, like, stop to go. I went to go turn in somewhere to, like, get some food. And she was making a left turn and, like, she cut some woman off that, like, wasn't paying attention. She was, like, on her phone or whatever. The woman, like, I wasn't really paying attention or wearing my seatbelt because nobody really wore seatbelts in back seats in New York. But, yeah, like, I guess, her car, she took a left and the car was coming and the car hit my door and it flung across the car. I hit the car door on the other side and I fractured my neck and then I landed on the center console. My brain was bloody and bruised and I fractured my neck and I was dead. I had died. So they had to revive me on the scene. So I was dead for 5 minutes. I guess they shocked me three times. They shocked me three times. After the third time, I finally came back to life. I suffered severe brain damage, like severe brain damage.
I was
like,
going to say, yeah. Like being dead for 5 minutes.
I suffered severe brain damage. Like I lost memories. Like I like couldn't remember a lot of stuff. I had problems with, like, word association. Like I still have it too. Like I'm like, what is that word? It sounds like this. So like I still have issues with that. My equilibrium is off too. So if I tilt my head like that, I'm fine to the right. If I start tilting it to the left, you'll see like my eyes go cross-eyed. I like go cross-eyed. So I can't lay, I'm like watching TV or a movie. I can't lay on this side. I have to lay on this side.
Oh, wow.
Or else I'll like see, or also go cross-eyed. Or if I'll have to like, you know, when you're drunk, you have to like put like one hand over the one eye so you can see. Yeah, that's how it is.
I've driven like that. I've driven that drunk where I drove.
You're like, what is that? Like, oh, yeah, like, yes. It's crazy. I was in a mini coma for 4 days. They had to wait 4 days to give me CAT scan because I had to be conscious for like my CAT scan to do it. So they had to wait 4 days for me to come out of the coma or whatever. But I guess also I used to have little dermals, like one in my cheek and like two in my chest. And I guess like my mom told me that because my mom was on vacation with my little sister, like on like a wine trip or something. They like left their vacation to be by my side and like they like spent all this money in hotels and all that stuff and whatnot. So I'm really grateful to have them I'm grateful that they like did all that for me.
Yeah.
But I guess like when they took the dermals out of me, cause it's like taking something out of my skin, I guess I woke up, I was like, what's so suck? And I passed back out. Like, of course. But I guess also like my mom like wrote this thing like, updating people to send. Well, he gave it to my friend Jeremy, who was like also raising money to help for like my bills or whatnot, hospital bills. So my mom wrote that like I couldn't remember who she was or my sister was. I thought like my little sister was like the doctor and like, or was the nurse or something, and my mom was like the wife or something. I like didn't know anything. Like I didn't know who my family was. Crazy. Wow. Yeah. So I like had issues like just. And, like, when I was in Buffalo, I had, like, you know, I was doing cognitive, occupational, and it was occupational, physical, and cognitive therapy. I was doing all three of those, like, three times a week. But then I was in Buffalo, and it was snowing, because this was in, like, November, December, and I was, like, I was so miserable, because, like, the snow and the cold weather, like, makes me so, like, makes me sad and depressed, and I was mm-hmm. already depressed, and I'd wake up literally every day, and I was, like, I want to end my life.
Wow. That's rough. So how'd you get through that?
I had to like get the fuck out of Buffalo. Like it was hard. Like I was just like, I wanted, cause it was like, it was lonely too. It was like, I was in Buffalo and like I grew up, sorry.
It was okay.
Like I grew up there, but I didn't really have like that many friends out there. And the ones that I did have, like I, you know, like snow and work and stuff like that, so I wasn't able to see anyone. So it was like my mom worked full time, so I was like by myself, like not being able to do anything. And like cooking was fucking awful. Like I was like, so I love cooking, but like I remember like trying to like cook eggs or something like that before I was vegan. I was vegetarian, so I was like trying to cook eggs and like I was putting oil in a pan and like seeing the little popping would like fucking terrified me. Like I was scared to cook and I was like, I couldn't do anything on my own and I couldn't like walk on my own because I had like right side weakness from like the crash. So I had to like have someone help me walk and I was like, this is awful. So I just wanted to fucking kill myself every fucking day. I was like, this is awful. And then I was like, I need to get to LA. Cause like my whole thing was like, I was gonna like move to LA. I already like sent all my belongings to my friend in Hollywood, in West Hollywood. And like, I was like, so all of my stuff was there. I had nothing. I had nothing with me except a suitcase, you know, I had no clothing, no nothing, especially for winter. I was gonna move there like right after Exotica. I was gonna move there like in like late November, like for Thanksgiving. I was gonna be there for Thanksgiving and like so I had literally nothing. So I had like I was like, I need to get to LA, I need to get to LA. But the thing that sucks about LA is because all the physical therapy and whatnot, all the therapy I had was like covered through No Jersey, No Fault, because it wasn't my fault. So all of my therapy and stuff was covered in New Jersey. But like the moment I moved to California, I didn't get that. So yeah. I literally had to get better on my own once I came out here. It's fucking the hardest thing ever. And like, yeah, it was hard. So I like, but being in California, like the sunshine and warm weather, I was like, yeah, that like helped me a bunch. And I had like, I have a support system out here. So yeah.
Yeah.
So that helped.
But, yeah. I mean, especially when you were first trying to recover on your own on the East Coast, did you not have a clear prognosis of how you were going to be? Like, did you not know if you're going to fully recover?
No, like my, the neurologist, like he told me that like, cause I was like, yeah, I'm going to try to move. Like January 10th is the day I was supposed to, like, I bought the ticket or everything. Like my mom bought me the ticket to go out there. Ticket was bought somehow from when I got to LA. And like my neurologist was like, there's no way you're going to be able to do this. I was like, fucking watch me. So I like, you know, I like made sure myself was better. My dad like bought me like a little Game Boy to like help my cognitive 1 hour. So like he bought me little games and stuff like that. I don't know where it went. It got lost somehow in one of the moves that I've had. Mm-hmm. But I remember like in December, I went back a month later and he's like, you've made incredible progress. I was like, wow, thank you. Yeah, I'm fucking determined. I'm super determined. If I like want something, I do it. So.
And that's so important for recovery.
Yeah.
my dad is 81 and has Parkinson's and his health has been declining. I mean, we had to cancel the podcast last week because he fell and split his head open. I mean, I sent you a photo.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God. You're like, I'm so sorry. I was like, no, don't be sorry. It's okay. Like, handle your stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It was intense. And, you know, he's just not been the same since he's gotten back from the hospital. Before that was his second trip to the hospital, actually third trip to the hospital this year. But he had been in the hospital for like 3 weeks before that with pneumonia and sepsis. And yeah, he's got like same thing, occupational therapist, physical therapist, like three times a week. He is pretty much wheelchair bound. He can walk with a walker, but someone needs to be there in case he like gets dizzy. But you know, my concern with him is that, well, first of all, he's older, you know, so obviously recovery is not the same, but he doesn't have that determination that you have, you know, like he's kind of, I think, given up a little bit.
Oh, that sucks.
You know, and I know that has so much to do with your recovery. And that's what's
absolutely. And also,
hard.
Like, I was, you know, like, they talk about the 27 club.
Mm-hmm.
I was 27 when that happened. I just turned 27, like, a couple months before then. Or, like, a month and a half before then. So I was part of the 27 club on the 5th of November.
That's crazy. For those of you who don't know what the 27 club is, it's a bunch of, like,
rock stars
rock stars who have died at the age of 27. Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison.
I think so, Jim Morrison. Was Kurt Cobain also 27 Club?
Maybe.
I think so. Was Marilyn Monroe? I know Betty Page died way down the line, but I think, any like young celebrity that dies, most of them die like at the age of 27. It's usually by like overdose or something like that.
Yeah.
Overdose or like... A tragic accident. I mean, overdose is a tragic accident. But it's crazy because I'm like, oh, I was part of the 27 club for like 5 minutes. It's crazy.
Do you remember waking up from your coma?
I don't remember anything. I mean, I just remember, like, my I had a lot of friends there, like, visiting. I have a huge support system. Like, when I had a huge support system with that. So, like, I had, like, friends visiting me all the time. Yeah, so.
How did that change your outlook on life, that whole incident?
So before that, I was very much a New Yorker. I was living in Brooklyn, but I was very much a New Yorker and, like, very much, like, oh, fuck everything. Like, very, like, you know, taking, not really, like, I don't know, not really, like, being optimistic at all. And since then, I've, like, been, like, very, like, I don't take anything for granted yeah. at all. Like, it's, like, I'm, like, super, like, grateful for everything. So, yeah.
Even now, 12 years later?
Yeah, like, I'm, like, I mean, I know, like, I think I have, like, more of a free thinking than anything.
You know, even if we try to focus on gratitude, and even if we do find ourselves grateful, most of the time, it's obviously, we're never like that 24/7.
Yeah.
But to even be able to access that, like, yeah. more frequently, I think, is more than most people do.
Oh, yeah. Like, people need to just, like, know that, like, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. Do you think about that sometimes when you're, like, faced with some kind of stupid issue, like some, I don't know, day-to-day life nonsense, and you're just like, it's not the end of the world, I almost died?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, like, when I get, obviously, I'll get frustrated of everything, like, you know, sometimes when people are taking too long to do stuff, I'll, like, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll be like, you know, they need this time. It's fine. It's not the end of the world. It's fine, whatever, like. So it messes up my order. As long as I can eat it, I'm like, whatever, it's fine, you know? Yeah, I'm just like, I mean, yeah, everyone gets in their little slumps, but, like, I just try to be more grateful for everything, be more patient. Like, I think that's my goal as I get older, to be more patient and not let the little things bother me.
That's the hard thing.
Yeah, it's so hard. Because I'm, like, such a firecracker. Like, I'm like, I will talk shit to anyone and, like, you know,
yeah,
I'm very, like, I try to keep the New Yorker in me alive, but, you know, I'm trying to, like, dull down the New Yorker.
It's like a healthy balance.
Yeah,
you want that side of you that pushes through tragedy and trauma, like your accident, but then also, yeah, like, have some compassion and patience. It's exactly. hard. It's a hard line to walk.
Yeah, it's especially in LA. It's hard in LA.
Why do you say that?
It's hard at, I don't know, because there's a lot of people that are just, like, I don't know. There's, I mean, I guess that's with any big city. There's a lot of, like, toxic people everywhere. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of people who are just very, like, unaware out here.
Mm.
How, maybe, like, that's just the younger generation.
Don't get me started on the younger generation.
Get off my lawn!
What are the differences between, like, people in New York and L.A.?
I feel like in New York, people are just more aware. Mm-hmm. They're just more aware of everything. Like, mm-hmm. I was walking through, like, I don't know, like, the Times Square area or whatever, and I was like, I can tell the people that are actually, like, crossing the street that are actually New Yorkers and the one who are just, like, visiting, because the people who are just, like, visiting, they're just, like, looking around, not really paying attention to, like, if the light's green or whatever. Like, New Yorkers are very, like, they'll look at cars and they'll wait until the car stops. They're like, all right, I'll go, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like, yeah, I feel like New Yorkers are more, like, aware of everything. And I feel like a lot of people in LA are so, like, distracted by everything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. There's also, like, I think people in California specifically, I think there's that more laid back attitude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas New Yorkers are more focused. And
yeah, that's what I mean. Like they're just, they're more focused. So they're, like, more aware of, like, all their surroundings. Like me, like, I'm super aware of my surroundings when I'm, like, walking around and stuff. Although sometimes I have tunnel vision.
Yeah.
On purpose.
So I feel like that's probably specifically because you walk around so much in New York.
Yeah.
You don't really do that in LA.
No. I mean, I try, but it's hard. Everything's so far.
It is. It really is.
It took me an hour to get here today. It was awful.
Yeah. No, it takes an hour pretty much to get anywhere in LA. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah. In Vegas, it's like everything's 10 minutes from me. I'm like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah. This is actually, this studio is like 10 minutes from me, which is crazy. Yeah,
not me.
I know that never happens. You've been sober since 2008.
I have.
So a few years before the accident, was it an even bigger challenge to stay sober while recovering from the accident?
It wasn't really, like, since I've been sober, it hasn't really been a big, I mean, that first like 6 months to a year was really hard because it was like I was getting used to stuff and I had to like, I got really bad social anxiety by like, you know, cause you're not going to the bars and drinking. You're just like, I had to still make myself go to the bars because that's like where all my friends were. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that's, I was very like, I was very much a socialite. So yeah, like, I mean, going to bars is fine. Just I had to like figure out what to do at bars. So I actually would start knitting. I would like knit at the bar.
Oh my God, that's so wholesome and sweet.
Yeah. I was like, but it gave me something to do. Instead of just like texting, looking at my phone, I was like, oh, I'll just start knitting. And everyone's like, oh, that's Jessie. She's just knitting at the bar. You know?
Oh my God.
But yeah, I think, I also think my sobriety helped me with like my recoveries, like mm-hmm. why I was able to recover so fast. You know, not so fast, but like why my neurologist was like, oh, there's no way, you know? And then like a month later, he was like, wow, you've made amazing progress. It's because I'm sober.
Yeah.
Because I don't have any other like weird toxins in my body.
Yeah.
Any drugs in my body.
Tell me about getting sober. Why did you decide to get sober? And like, when you say sober, do you mean just alcohol? Do you mean everything? Because different people have different definitions of sober.
So I never really liked weed. It always gave me like a weird, like I always had a bad reaction. People were like, oh, it's a strain of weed. I was like, no. Every time I smoke weed, it's a bad reaction. Like mm-hmm. at THC, I'm not good with THC. I mean, I've like done CBD, but it has like no drug in it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. There's no psychoactive element.
But yeah, like I remember I was just like, you know, I moved to New York and I was freshly at Burning Angel. So I used to throw Burning Angel parties. I was like other than Joanna, I was like the top girl at Burning Angel. So I would always throw parties through New York and like, you know, this and that. So I became friends with a lot of DJs and promoters and bartenders and bar owners and stuff like that. So I'd be like, I'd show up to the bar and like, oh, here's the table with a free bottle of booze. So I'd drink lots of booze. So I think it was like 5-6 nights a week, I was just like drinking, you know, because like, I would just be, you know, crazy as a, mm-hmm. you know, the crazy drunk girl doing stuff. Oh my God, yeah. I can't believe she did that. You know, like I would like, and then anytime I like wanted to like do drugs, like cocaine mm-hmm. was when I was drunk.
Right.
And I've done a lot of stuff for the cocaine because I was drunk and because I was like, I don't want to pay for the cocaine. I'll just do this. So I'm like, mm-hmm. I made a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah.
And like, It wasn't until like I like woke up and I was like craving alcohol. I was like, oh fuck. I was like, my father, I grew up in NA. My father was a head speaker in NA and like, you know, so it's like it runs in my family, you know, addiction, you know.
So was he a circuit speaker?
Yeah.
Okay, so he traveled around and...
Well, not a circuit speaker. I don't know. I don't know what that I don't know so why circuits, I said yeah, I don't know what that is.
Well, circuits, so when you say head speaker, was he maybe the secretary of meetings?
So he was like the NA, like the group that we went to, he was like one of the main speakers. So he like ran all the meetings.
Okay, so he was probably like a secretary or...
Yeah, of the whatever it was in Buffalo. But okay. Yeah, so...
Okay.
And so I'm like, I don't want that. Yeah. I don't want that at all. So I was like, all right, I'm going to stop drinking. And then it was like, I didn't do meetings or anything like that because mm-hmm. I don't like organized religion. I don't like anything it stands for. I think it's very toxic. Mm-hmm. And I think once people find it, they're just dependent on it. And if something doesn't go their way, they're like, oh, I can do this because of this. I was like, no, I'd rather just depend on myself for my sobriety. Mm-hmm. So I just started hanging out with sober people in New York and going out. And like, I was like, oh, you can be sober and go out and have fun. So this girl, Ariel, she like, I would just go out with her and then people just knew me as like the Burning Angel who didn't drink, who liked the party, who would just get her friends drunk instead. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And you haven't had any cravings or like times that you wish that you could?
No, actually I get really like turned off by people. I mean, I think people who are like drunk, I just think like people, okay, there's like fun drunks. Like when Joanna gets drunk, I can tell she's drunk because she'll start like dancing like a stripper at the bar. I was like, oh, Joanna's drunk. I love Joanna when she's drunk. But like other people I don't know that don't know how to handle their alcohol, like they just like, they're just sloppy to me. Yeah. A lot of people just gets too sloppy and just like, it's too much. I'm like, oh, it's really annoying.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't want to be that person. So if I drink, I become that person. Yeah. So yeah.
Everybody's different. There's... the most annoying thing that my husband does when he's not even drunk, he's buzzed, is when we watch a movie, he pauses it constantly or tells me to pause it because he wants to like talk about the movie as we're watching it. And I get so irritated. I'm like, babe, I just want to watch the movie. I don't want to fucking dissect it. Like, stop asking me to pause. It's so annoying. So, like, that's like the worst that I have to deal with.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad. But it is funny how, like, these certain characteristics come out in people, and you're just like, when you're sober, you're just like, duh.
Like, oh God, knock it off.
So do you think that, I mean, would you have characterized yourself as an alcoholic, or do you just think that, like, it was becoming a problem? And so then, like, you just decided to like not engage in the problem anymore.
Yeah. I consider myself an alcoholic because I had to depend on it, because I started depending on it and I started craving it. It wasn't until I craved it that I was like, oh shit. You know, I guess I wasn't like a fucking, like, you know, like, I'm an addict, you know, like, I'm a very addictive personality, very addictive. Like, I like go in full force everything. So, yeah.
It's so interesting because, you know, I'm sober too. And I definitely had to do like the 12-step program, and I'm still in it. And I tried to not do it because I didn't want to. That was like the last thing I wanted to do, was like go hang out with a bunch of fucking people and, like, you know, the God word and everything, like, really, like, bumped, you know, freaked me out at the beginning. And so I tried everything, but there was just no way that I could do it without like some kind of community and some kind of like accountability. Like, I just had to have that. Otherwise it was not possible for me to get sober. But, you know, it's like, it's different for everybody. Like, and that's so interesting because I think about it too. Like, I always try to pinpoint, okay, like, what's the difference between an alcoholic and a problem drinker? You know what I mean? Because, like, they're two different things.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably because, I mean, it sounds like you, I mean, you made a decision to stop, and then, like, you just stopped. Also,
with
me,
like, I couldn't just drink a little. It was either, like, not drinking or fucking get wasted out of her mind. I would, like, go out, like, you know, because Buffalo's open, bars are open until 4 a.m. So I would just go out drinking in Buffalo, and, like, I would just, like, start drinking. When I got too drunk, I would just, like, make myself throw up, like, to get sober in the bathroom and start drinking some more. Like, that was...
Which,
that
to me, feels like a super logical thing to do.
Yeah,
like,
I mean...
No joke.
Like, you want to keep drinking, you know? I mean, it's like I'm drinking stuff that tastes delicious. So, you know, I just want to keep, you know, my Cosmos and my Armada Sours, my Captain Diet. Love it. Apple Teenies. I like drinking, like, at bar. I like drinking, like Apple Teenies and stuff like that, and Cosmos, because it, like, make me look fancy in a bar.
Yeah.
I have my fingerless gloves on and my, you know.
They are beautiful drinks. They really are very pretty.
Yeah, they're not good.
No. It's funny because I used to wish that I was one of those people who threw up while they were drinking, so that I could, because I always felt that the people who did that, or who threw up after a long night of drinking, got it out of their system and woke up the next morning not as hungover. But I used to wake up the next morning so hungover. And if I was going to throw up, it was going to be the next morning, and it was going to be like the rest of the day. So I used to literally, like, wish I was one of those people that just threw up at the end of the night. And, like, it's so funny because at the time I thought that maybe that would be, like, the answer to my problems, was that I would throw up after a long night of drinking, rather than, like, oh, I don't know, maybe the answer to your problems is to not drink that much, or not drink. But no.
Like, yeah,
that wasn't my first thought.
It's so funny, like the things that we think, like, when we're like, when you have alcohol in your system, we're like, oh yeah, this is the reason. Like, no, that's not the reason.
Yeah.
That's a solution.
I remember too, like, getting really drunk and then making terrible decisions about, like, texting somebody or sending an email.
Having sex with people you shouldn't be having sex with.
Yeah. And then, like, actually thinking about and recognizing, okay, I'm drunk. Let's really think about this. Like, is this a good idea? And trying to be logical in that mind, and then deciding, like, yes, this is a good idea. And then, like, the next morning being like, what the fuck,
what did I do?
Like, but trying to be logical when I was drunk just didn't work.
Yeah, I've been sober since 2008. Yeah, since March of 2008. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I really admire people like you who can just, like, do that. Who can just be like, you know what? This is a problem for me. This is affecting my life in a negative way. And I'm just going to stop engaging in something that's affecting my life in a negative way. Like, I just couldn't, like, intellectually, I knew that. I knew that I needed to stop, but it was just not possible. I just couldn't do it.
Like, I've gone to meetings and stuff like that, because back in the day I got a DUI. So, you know, the court, like, it's crazy. The court, like, when you get a DUI, you have to go to 2 AA meetings, like, a week, mm-hmm. plus go through, like, alcohol classes mm-hmm. or something like that, drug alcohol classes. But it's, like, it's anonymous. So you would just have to, like, get something stamped. But here's the thing. Like, how are they going to prove that that's not the stamp? So I was, like, you know, I was still drinking or whatever. It's like, when I lived in Maryland. But, yeah, like, I was, like, I copy the stamp, and I bought a stamp from online, like, with that, like, marking. So that's just what I did. I just, like, stamped my stamp, and I'm like, this is stupid.
You're so right, and it's so funny because I didn't think about it at the time either, because I went to a couple of treatment centers mm-hmm. and sober living, and so I had to get stuff signed off. But there I was a little bit more accountable because they knew the meetings mm-hmm. in the area. And I had to, like, check in, and, you know, a lot yeah. of people that at my treatment center would be going to the same meeting, so yeah. they could say if I wasn't there. But it didn't occur to me at the time that, yeah, I could just, and we didn't even have stamps. Yeah, someone would just sign it.
Yeah, because, like it's alcohol anonymous. How yeah. are you going to prove? How yeah. are you going to prove this?
No, you could totally, I mean, I'm not trying to encourage anybody that has a court ticket to not go to meetings, because it could be the right thing for you. It's not right for everybody, but it could save your life. But yeah, definitely, like, could have just not done that. But I never yeah. got a DUI, so I never had a court card.
I did. I was like with my mom, and we're in Frederick, Maryland, and we went to this like hotel that was like a few miles away, and we were drinking Cosmos all night. My mom like met some guy, so she like left the guy, so I drove home. And I was, like, looking for my cigarettes. I was, like, where's my cigarettes? And, like, I had them, like, between my legs. And I'm, like, I looked down. I was, like, oh, there's that. So instead of going 270, the one direction on 270, instead of going north, I went into the median and flipped the car over. And I was going the other way. Oh, yeah. My. I crashed my mom's car. Oof. Sorry, Mom. Sorry. It's okay. Sorry, Mom. I love you. Yeah, like. You know, she didn't like scold me for it. She was just really like, she's like, oh, what did you do? She's like, yeah. Oh, so I had to go to, so I was like, I'm sorry. And then I still drank after that. And I was like, oh man, I'm still like, I'm an idiot. So yeah, I don't know how to, I had no idea how to say no to alcohol ever. So that, I think that's how I know I'm an alcoholic. Cause like, mm-hmm. I didn't know how to say no. And I was like, oh, just drink. I'll just keep drinking. I'll be fine. And then I'll get fucking wrecked. And it was like awful. So yeah. I know there's a lot of people in porn who are actually sober, like the sober mm-hmm. porners or whatever they call mm-hmm. in Vegas, like Goth Charlotte and her wife.
Yeah. I know there's quite a few people. I've had a few of them on my podcast, Seth Gamble, Kenzie Taylor.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are like openly sober.
Sober is sexy.
Which is cool, because I remember when I was first starting to get sober and I was talking to my therapist, and I had ABN was coming up, and I like had to go, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, nobody else is sober in the industry. She's like, you'd be surprised. There's sober people everywhere. They just don't necessarily advertise it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, there's no way. Like, this is porn. No one's sober. I'm the only one. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up going, and I remember Dustin Flint, Larry's nephew. Yeah. Nephew. Mm-hmm. He was sober, and he told me that there was like a secret like AA industry meeting that was like being held in one of the rooms, and I was like, oh, holy shit. And I remember I went, and there were all of these people that like I really respected, like people who like were the heads of big companies.
Oh, wow.
And I was so like, I can say actually one of them, because he was super open about it, so I'm not outing him, and he's passed away, unfortunately. I'm Christian Mann for Evil Angel. He was sober, and he's always been very open and vocal about it and on social media and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm not outing him, but I remember like seeing people like him, and I was like, wow. And I was like, man, maybe I like can do this and like also still work in this industry. It's like interesting. So that was really helpful, just to feel like there was other people like me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's more like us.
Yeah, I know. We're everywhere, actually. It's kind of surprising. Okay, let's talk a little bit about your tattoos.
Yeah.
You have a lot of tattoos. What are some of your favorite tattoos, and are there any like meaning, like deep meanings behind any of them?
So I'm wearing pants, so you can't really tell. Mm-hmm. But I have my whole leg done. This part of my leg, it's Little Mermaid.
Oh, really? Like the Disney Little Mermaid?
So I have Ursula and her two eels on this leg. And then I have like, I have the Eric statue. I have the Dingle Hopper. I have Sebastian, Flounder, Scuttle, Ariel. But my friend Dave did Ariel and he's like, do you want to give her like bigger boobs and like a big butt? I was like, absolutely. So it's like Ariel with big boobs.
It's like with a BBL.
Yeah. Ariel with a BBL. And she's got a big butt and she's sitting inside a shell and stuff. Yeah. But on this, like, I have a lot of, like, sober tattoos. Like, I try to get, like, oh, so one thing that also helped me with, like, being sober is I started, like, hanging out with a bunch of people who are straight edge. Like, straight edge is, like, no drugs, no alcohol. Like, it's, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. no weird things. And, like, I'm also vegan, so I'm vegan edge. But, yeah, I started getting, like, straight edge tattoos. Like, I have, like, drug free and, like, the X's and stuff like that. My friend Bo did the straight edge XXX. So I have a bunch of, on my neck, I have, like, the three X's. Like, a lot of my tattoo artist friends were also straight edge. So, like, I get it every year that I'm sober, most, except this past year, I'll get, like, a straight edge tattoo. Like, commemorate that I'm, like, you know, that I'm sober. So I usually get it done by, I have to get it done by a sober tattoo artist. Because you can't have someone who's not sober do yeah. something on your body that means something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so those are ones that actually, like, mean something. And then I have another one up on my back. It's a little, like, tombstone my friend Desiree did. And it has, like, my death day. It says RIP with, like, my death day that I had.
The 5th of November.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Always remember.
Yeah. So most of my tattoos don't really mean anything. They're just, like, pinups and, like, so, like, naked women, you know.
I mean, naked women mean something. So what's with The Little Mermaid?
I love The Little Mermaid.
I have to say that movie holds up really well. So I've started rewatching old Disney cartoons because mm-hmm. I have a daughter now. And The Little Mermaid holds up so well. And the music, like, oh my God, Under the Sea, it's such a fun song.
It's like the one ride that I go to. I go to Disney all the time. But it's like the one ride I go to every time I'm in Disney. I was like, I have to go through it. I sing along through the entire ride. And so... yeah, when I was younger, I, like, watched the movie because I was, like, you know, it came out in 89, and I was 6 years old. I was born in 83. I was born in the 1900s. We were born in the 1900s. So, yeah, so I was, like, six when I came out, so I was, like, obsessed with, like, mermaids, and I started drawing mermaids. And, like, also every year at Disney, there's a thing called Mermaid Day where bunch of people, one day... dress up like mermaid. We all have meetups and stuff like that. We take group photos. Like, everyone dresses up like a mermaid. And I met a lot of my, like, a lot of my Disney friends. I've met them, like, through Mermaid Day.
Wait, you have Disney friends?
I have Disney friends.
What does that mean?
I have friends who I go to Disney with. Like, Sheena Ryder, like, her and I mean, she didn't redo her pass, so she can't go as much. But I have, like, a friend, Tony, who worked for Disney that I can do sign-ins. So, yeah. So Sheena Ryder and I go to Disney. Me and Joanna have gone to Disney. Like, it's just a happy place, you know?
How often do you go? Like, how many times a year do you go?
In October, I went 4 times.
Wait, in October?
Yeah. I have the Inspire Pass, which is the most expensive one. It's like $1,600 for like the $1,600 for the year, and you get free parking, which is $30. Saves me $30. I get like discounts and stuff like that. But also on December 4th through the 9th, I'm going to Disney World.
Wow. Have you ever been there before?
I went there 2 years ago for my ex's birthday.
Okay.
So it was like with him and his mom. So it was like, it was okay. You know?
I was looking into Disneyland because, again, like I said, I have a daughter. And so we were thinking about going, but I was also like...
Lily Lane goes all the time with her daughter too.
Who does?
Lily Lane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, she's two, so I'm a little bit worried about, like, it being a lot for her and, like, her... She's not very good at listening sometimes and likes to run away from me, so I'd have to put her on a leash, which I don't really want to do, but I'm scared of losing her. So we were looking into, like, ways to skip the line and, like, there's a private tour thing.
It's, like, $700 an hour.
Expensive.
So the thing that... Because I had it... So a few years ago... My friend and his girlfriend, they brought me to Disney for my birthday as a birthday present. And they got a host or a guide or whatever called. They got a guide for us. And also, if you're a Club 33 member, which is also really hard to get into.
Yeah,
also,
that's like
you get
it's not only expensive, but you'd be like recommended or something.
It's like a $75,000 initiation fee. 75,000 just become a member. That's what it is now. It used to be like when my friend Randy became a member, like it was like 35,000 or whatever.
Which is still obscene.
I think Dana Diarmond's a member.
Really?
Yeah, I think she's a member. Sorry, Dana. Sorry.
Wow.
I don't mean to like call you out, but yeah, but she was posted that she's there anyway. So yeah.
That's crazy.
So she, I don't know how much she paid, but yeah, yeah. I know they recently raised it and it's like 75,000 and it's like a couple year wait. But you also you get free, like you get like a bunch of free passes per day. You get like four of the top of the line passes, annual passes. You get like a bunch of like sign-ins. You get like a ton of freaking like fast passes and stuff for like the day. And then you get like a bunch of guides throughout the year. So, but the guides are like. I like try to get one for my ex's birthday. I was like, yeah, it's like, I heard it's like $100 an hour. And that's fine. You know, I'll just get one for like 8 hours. $800. That's nothing. You know, that's like almost a scene, you know?
I think what we looked up, it was a 10 people. Mm-hmm. Like it was for a group of 10 people. That was like the minimum. Mm-hmm. And infants count towards that, by the way.
That's crazy.
And I think it was like, $3,500 or something, and then you had to pay the admission fee on top of that. Like, they didn't include the admission fee, so it would end up being like $500 a person if you took like a group of 10 or something like that.
I mean, I would do that,
yeah,
I would totally do that. I know.
I don't know if I'm, I don't know,
but
if
not
I'm ready
for like, but not for like infants, that's crazy.
That's a that's also the thing, too. I feel like at two, like, I don't know how much.
Well, don't like if you're like it. Under a certain age, you're getting free to Disney anyway. I like that your podcast has turned into Disney.
Yeah.
I love it.
So the Insider Disney's podcast. This is the part where everyone's checked out.
This is not sponsored by Disney.
Yeah. They're like, are they going to get back to talk about boobs or something?
I'm talking about my nipple tattoos that I have.
Yeah. Actually, it was funny because Lily, my producer, like she wrote a note in her notes to me. She was like, I'm really obsessed with her. Heart nipple tattoo. She's like, I know you probably see this stuff all the time, but I just think that's so amazing.
Oh wait, I'm wearing.
Well, people can Google it because we can't show it on YouTube. Otherwise, I will get busted.
A little bit.
Just Google Jessie Lee boobs and take your safe.
Well, they're new though. They're new. They're pretty new.
Oh, they are.
Yeah, they're pretty new. I mean, they're not like crazy new. If you go to my Naughty America scene, I think they're my browser scene also. It's weird though. I filmed for Naughty America like. A month ago, and I filmed from Brazzers like months ago, and they both got released within a week. I was like, okay, cool. So I have a new Brazzers scene and a new Naughty America scene.
How about this? Will you do me a favor after this podcast is over? Can I take a picture of them?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I'll post them on my Patreon because I can post boobs on my Patreon, and then you guys can see that. Okay, cool.
It's another reason to keep listening.
Yeah, exactly. And support the show. Speaking of Patreon, we're going to end this interview, but we're going to do a little bonus Q&A for my Patreon members. So if you're a member, not only will you be able to see her new heart nipple tattoos, but you'll also be able to get to know so much more about Jessie Lee.
Sorry that I hijacked your interview with my Disney talk.
That's okay. I'm pretty sure I'm the one who continued to ask you about it. I could have diverted the conversation to boobs, but I chose Disney's life. Well, thank you so much, Jessie, for coming on. It's been such a pleasure.
I had fun.
Can you tell everybody where they can find you online, please?
You can find me. My Instagram is Jessie X Lee. It's JessieXLee. And then my Twitter is OMG, it's Jessie Lee. Not OMG, it's Jessie Lee. OMG, it's Jessie Lee.
ITS.
ITS. And there's a lot of people who pretend to be me, but they're not me. Because if you don't.
Are either of your accounts verified?
It's so hard to get verified, man.
Yeah.
And now that. I need to start doing other stuff that isn't just porn. I need to stop just doing corn stuff.
I don't know though. Like, it's a weird thing because some people get verified. I only got verified because I have a friend who is a talent agent and she like knows people. So she got me verified. But that was like the only reason that I even got verified. I don't know how anybody else does it.
It's so hard. You have to be a director and stuff like that too. So I think if directors, because Joanna's verified. She's been verified for a while, but she also owned a website and stuff like that. So I think if you have like, if you're not just like an actress, you can get it's hard to get as an actress, like with like, you know, under a couple million followers,
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get verified. But once you're like at that like couple million and you're like doing other stuff also, I think it's easier to get verified. Because I don't think they just want to verify like anyone who's a porn star. You know, they want to like make sure that like you're actually like, do other stuff also.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, and whatever, we go on this first forever, but they should, because the problem is that there's so many people who create fake accounts who pretend to be porn stars and then fucking scam people out of money. And you can't say like, you know, make sure that it's a verified account just to avoid being scammed if they won't verify your account. Mm-hmm. To be fair, you can still have a verified account and people can still scam other people out of money. And those people will not only send $5,000 to some random person in Ghana who says they're being like held captive by their like boyfriend, but they will also still come back and blame you for the fact that they got scammed by somebody else. But it's still like your fault somehow. It's like,
yep. I'm like, sorry.
And it's crazy too, because both Twitter and TikTok and Instagram will shadow ban the actual performer's account and then allow the fake people to be searched.
This happened like a year or so ago. Crazy. Like I was like, I was just like looking at my memories and stuff like that on Facebook, and it said that I was like, I like someone like tried to do account. Someone said that they were me and they weren't me, and they had like 20,000 followers, which is crazy. I'm like,
yeah,
I have like 200, like over 200,000, you know, like way over 200,000. So people were like, so I was like, people told me what I was like, oh, okay. So I like reported them for spam for impersonating me. And then they like, they shadow banned my account. They disabled my account. I was like, what is going on right now?
Yeah, I've heard of that too.
So yeah, but I finally got it back. I had a friend who worked for Instagram, who like got a bunch of pages back also, who got, he's the person who got Exotica their page back.
Okay.
But now he got fired for Instagram for like getting people back that he didn't actually know personally. So, so stupid.
Yeah. God.
Anyways,
but if you want to follow me on Instagram, I am shadow banned. So sometimes it's hard to find me. By the way, if you want to get around the shadow ban, like little trick, use Google. So search Holly Randall Instagram on Google. That will take you to the right account rather than trying to search Holly Randall in Instagram. Because Google doesn't like abide by shadow bans. It just goes wherever the most amount of traffic is. Aww. So that's a good way to, that's what I do when I try to find people, because like, obviously, you know, when I'm trying to tag people for the podcast, a lot of times fake accounts come up if I search in the app. But if I go outside of the app and I search in Google and I put in the performer's person's name plus whatever platform I'm trying to find them on, that is almost always the correct one.
I've done that for bands.
So. Yeah. So just so
do
you
that
know.
Performance.
But it is Holly Randall on Instagram and on Twitter. Only Holly Randall. It's nothing else in there. There's nobody else.
It.
Like we were just saying, there's nobody else who there's no, I don't have any other account. I don't have any secret accounts for my fans. It's just they're both verified. Please, for God's sakes, don't send money to somebody else. It's kind of crazy.
I mean, you can't, but you know.
You can, but then me. Don't fucking blame me, man. My grandmother is not dying in the hospital. I got that from somebody. They actually, and then they sent me, this person had forged a driver's license of me, had taken a photo of me and like made a fake Texas ID. I don't live in Texas. I've never lived in Texas. And sent it to me. And that was how that person proved they were me. And that, like, my grandmother was dying in the hospital and they needed hospital bills. My grandmothers are both dead. So are my grandparents. So don't
send. That's crazy that they did that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts. So don't send that person money. Send me money. You know what? Actually, don't send me money. Join my Patreon. Patreon.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered, where you can watch the Q&A we're about to do and see Jessie's boobs. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching. I will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. If you love my show and want to support it, I ask that you take the time to rate and review my podcast. Now, if you're not sure how to do that, you can go to ratethispodcast.com/HRU and you'll automatically be directed to the various podcast apps your device supports and then be led to the place where you can rate my show. 5 stars, of course, and leave your glowing review. Okay, it doesn't have to be glowing, but you know, say something nice. You can also financially support this show through my Patreon by visiting patreon.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered, where you get so many perks for your support. Things such as early releases and live recordings of my interviews, merchandise such as stickers, mugs, and hoodies, autographed copies of my photography books, free access to my private Snapchat and not safe for work website, hollyrandall.com, and my bonus podcast, My LA Porn Life. Also, join my Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/hollyrandallunfiltered, and you can watch the video versions of these interviews at youtube.com/hollyrandallunfiltered. Oh, and of course, sign up for my newsletter at hollyrandallunfiltered.com and get all the info on upcoming guests and special projects. Again, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for supporting my podcast in whatever way that you can. I want to take this opportunity to introduce you guys to an amazing podcast. They are part of the Pleasure Podcasts Collective, which of course I am a member of as well. It's called Shameless Sex. It's hosted by Amy and April, two really amazing women with a passion for educating and initiating shame-free conversations around sexuality. It's actually one of the most popular sexuality podcasts in the world. So if you haven't listened to it yet, I highly recommend that you do, but I'm going to let them tell you what it's all about.
I'm Amy, sex and relationship coach, certified sex educator, and 2022's Sexpert of the Year in the sex toy industry.
And I'm April, VP of Hot Octopus, sex toy mogul, and 2016's Woman of the Year in the sex toy industry. Allow us to introduce you to Shameless Sex, a real talk, informative podcast all about sex and relationships, but with a playful twist.
Want to learn how to eat pussy like a champ? Suck dick like a boss?
Ew.
How to better communicate, connect with, and touch lovers and partners? Or maybe you just want to be the master baiter of your own sexual pleasure.
Shameless Sex releases episodes weekly and features accredited doctors, authors, therapists, and educators, available on all podcast apps. Just look up Shameless Sex to discover your new best friends when it comes to all things sex and relationships. To learn more, visit shamelesssex.com.